to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Slightly Offsides. We have a really special episode for you guys today. We're going to be interviewing our first D1 athlete. We have Ty Mason, a senior cornerback from Temple. Ty, first of all, thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it, man. No problem. Thanks for having me here.
So the way we're going to go through this today is we're just going to ask Ty a few questions, keep it conversational. It's great to have you on here, bro. We've done a lot of stuff together in the past, just outside of, sports talk or whatever you want to call it. And so I'm just excited to have you here on first because it's been dope, like meeting you over the past year and getting to like watch everything. So first question I want to start off with, we saw a lot of transfers this year, bro. Due to the new transfer portal rule, do you think that's a good or a bad thing for college football?
Before we got on, me and Mike were just kind of talking about it. I feel like it's kind of a good thing and kind of a bad thing. Just because, in college football, depending on where you're at, coaches come and go, you know what I'm saying? And players don't really have the opportunity to, well, they didn't have the opportunity to move to and from, you know what I'm saying? Find the place for them because, when you commit to somewhere, recruits are going to tell you like, oh, this is what's going to happen for you. This is what we're going to do. And next thing you know, it's not like that. Or a couple months later, that coach leaves and you might want to, find somewhere that you can call your own home. So I feel like for players that haven't found their home yet, I feel like it's a really good thing. Sometimes it can deter your path. Like if you are in the transfer portal and you're already at a really good school, you know what I'm saying? Just because you're not getting playing time don't mean you got to enter the transfer portal, But I don't knock anybody for entering the transfer portal because, Like if you're not happy where you're at, then find somewhere to be happy.
Right. Yeah. So what made you like you took your time, you waited your turn for Temple. Mm-hmm. What made you want to, stay through that process, even with this past year? I know you sat out, 2020 for COVID and stuff like that. What made you say like, I still got, coming into this year, you had 2 years of eligibility left. You could have went, transfer somewhere else and did something else or what made you stay?
I really just, Temple's my home, from the first moment I went on my official visit, I was like, yeah, this is where I want to graduate from. So I just stuck to it. You know what I'm saying? I loved the players for the most part. Some of the coaches I came in contact with were great people. So I think it was easy for me to stay at Temple. A lot of the big reason why I stayed was the players that stayed, There were a lot of young guys on the team the last few years. And I felt like as a leader, I couldn't leave those dudes. Those guys have opportunities to, take it to the next level. And I didn't want to abandon them. I felt like as a leader, I couldn't do that to them. So, I stuck it out. I took my leadership role and I just kept it moving. I didn't really regret my decision. I love Temple. I love the environment, the community. So I didn't really see it as an issue for me.
Yeah. What's your favorite part about Philly?
Probably how much there is to do out there. There's so many opportunities for whatever you're looking for. Like, I don't know. I think just for me, I really like the environment. It's really cool. Everybody around there is cool. Temple was just a really good place to be.
Yeah. I was just up there a couple months back. And I didn't really expect it to be like smack in the city of Philly, but it's really right there.
Right.
They're trying to do like a new feel, right?
Yeah. They've been back and forth on it for the last couple of years. A lot of the community doesn't want it just because of the construction that it takes. And, they're going to have to probably move out some other stuff that they just built. So, and construction's been on Temple's campus for years now. Since I've been there, they've been constructing something new every year. So,
It's funny. It's like that along the East Coast. Like a lot of schools out here are just construction field. Like, whoa.
Yeah, a lot of old schools are starting to, you know, make themselves more modern. So it's if you didn't have a stadium already right now, it's probably like the worst time to try and get that done just because, you know, everybody like as far as that aren't student athletes, you know, they might want a new library or a new student center. You know what I'm saying? They're not really worried about a stadium, and that takes money and resources. And sometimes colleges don't have that.
Yeah. Well, so going on to the next question, I really do love Philly. I really love Philly, by the way. It's got to be a top tier place. Next question for you, though, is can you shed some light on Manny Diaz? What was that process like? And how did it affect y'all as a team?
So my experience with Manny Diaz was very, very brief. I'm pretty sure it was like that for everybody on the team at the time because, you know, I think it wasn't even 2 weeks. It was probably the 2 week mark that Manny Diaz that we had learned that Manny Diaz was going to be our head coach. So once that happened, you know, he came down with his family and we all had a team meeting at our football facility. And he was like, you know, this is the place I want to be, blah, blah, blah. Just telling us, you know, like what some of his ideals are, like that kind of stuff, just getting to know him. And I don't even think 3 days passed. And he had got an offer to be a head coach at Miami, and which was his where he was originally. So I understand it, you know, but once he declared that he was going to Miami, we didn't hear from him after that. You know what I'm saying? He probably talked to the AD or whatever, but us as like players, we didn't hear from him. So, you know, like we're like, OK, what now? You know, how's that going to affect the team? A lot of people took that opportunity to just be like, okay, this is a bad situation. I'm just going to get out of it. I'm going to transfer, you know, find somewhere else that I can be, which was okay. A lot of people waited it out to see what else was going to happen. You know, like we could have possibly gotten, there was so many candidates, you know, like we've seen so much on Twitter, heard so much, you know, like, so we're just trying to see what's going on. So I think a few weeks go by, maybe a week or two go by. And then that's when they hired Rod Carey. And that was our coach from that point on. But the Manny Diaz situation probably didn't affect us too much besides the fact that he wasn't our coach. And, you know, Rod Carey ended up taking control. But I think the players didn't really feel so much need to, you know what I'm saying, like be like, oh, this is the end of the world, because it really wasn't. But, you know, it's just the college football business. You know, for most coaches, it's about money. And, you know, once you see them dollar signs, you know, if it's better than what you were getting, by all means, go take it. You know what I'm saying? You got to feed your family. So, yeah, I wasn't really taken back by it. I was like, okay, like, you know, as a Temple player, you know, like we were used to adversity at that point. So,
yeah. And I mean, it's just so interesting because, you know, like you said, it happened so quick. It was in and out, like. You know, I mean, you see it happen, but also at the same time, it's just like back and forth like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's coming from one position, coming in to, you know, a Temple spot to leave for a Miami spot. You may see someone stick it out for about 4 or 5 years at the spot that they just took. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm out of here quick.
Yeah, once a head coach comes to an org, they don't, like, normally keep the staff that was already there.
They got to replace.
So, like, a lot of the people that I seen come in and out of the building within those 2 weeks was crazy. Like, I was like, who are these people? Okay, now I got to learn a new group of people. Like, but it wasn't too bad. But it definitely was a time where we went through it a little bit.
Yeah. And then what was it like adjusting to Ross playbook?
It really wasn't too hard. Like, playbook-wise, it definitely wasn't too difficult. Defense, you know, like you get a coverage, you get a concept, you know what I'm saying? And you follow that concept. So once we got the terms down and all that, it really wasn't too bad. Yeah. I think most college playbooks are similar to a certain extent to where once a coach changes, you know, another group of players can understand it. But definitely it was an adjustment as far as, you know, like activities and workouts and stuff like that, because it was a lot different than, you know, what I experienced with Coach Collins and a little bit of Coach Rowe.
You had those 6 a.m.s and
mat drills, all that crazy stuff. I still got PTSD from that stuff today. it definitely made me to the man I am today. I will say that.
So Ty, you mentioned Coach Rule, and this was something we talked about before hopping on the podcast, right? While we were waiting. But you know, Coach Rule was ultimately the guy who originally recruited you to come to Temple. Yep. And we were talking about how the year before you committed, right, was the year that Temple really made a run kind of and burst onto the national landscape. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you said right after you committed, right, Rule was out, he went ahead and took the job at Baylor. And then now is in the NFL. First off, like knowing Coach Rule and the experiences you have with him, both being recruited and in the short time he was your coach, right? Is that something like you expected, right? Like, could you tell right away that this was a guy that had, you know, NFL written on him? Was he like that good of a coach?
The moment I met Matt Rule, I knew that he was going places. Like, I knew that he was going to help whoever was underneath his wing to, you know, be the best player person that they could possibly be. You know, the whole environment around Temple, like even when Matt Rule left, Matt Rule was still at Temple. Like even Coach Collins acknowledged the fact that, you know, like his culture was a big thing. Like if it wasn't for Matt Rule, a lot of the success that Temple had wouldn't be a thing. You know what I'm saying? So I really appreciate Coach Rule for just setting the culture and all that. But yeah, I think as soon as I met him, I was like, yeah, this is definitely a top tier coach. Like one of the best coaches I've had an experience with. And even though it was a short time, like, you know, like you could just, he's one of those people that you can just tell, like, destined for greatness for sure.
So I guess a follow-up to that would be, right, obviously, like, this is a guy that just from the way that your face lit up when I asked the question, right, he was definitely loved in the locker room, right? I'm sure a lot of the staff loved him as well. So what was the feeling like when he kind of went to Baylor? I know, obviously, right, there's a part of you guys that was happy for him, and I'm sure that was the big part, right? Because, you know, moving on to a Power 5 school like Baylor and eventually to the NFL, like, those are big steps for his career. But, like, you mentioned the impact that he left, right? How was it like a kind of a somber and like sad environment when he announced? Like, how did the team take it?
It was definitely a weird time. I actually did my official visit at Temple during that period. So, you know, they had they were going to a bowl game that year, and, you know, Rule had decided to, you know, move on to Baylor before the bowl game. So, I believe it was Coach Foley, the special teams coach, that was the interim head coach at the time. And, you know, Foley's a great coach. I love Foley. So the period, that period of time, though, was a little weird for the players. What I experienced, you know, like they were trying to, you know, like be all smiles and all that stuff. But I knew, like, deep down, it hurt them a little bit. But at the same time, you know, that was Coach Rule's like dream job. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to go to Baylor and coach there. So, and you know, money's also a factor, you know what I'm saying? So I think the legacy that he left on Temple was great enough for him to, you know, take that next step where people weren't as like, well, where they felt offended, like, oh, you're just leaving us. You know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, everyone just took it with a grain of salt. Like, you know, now it's time to move on. And a lot of the staff that was with Rule at the time did not leave with him. I think only like 2 or 3 coaches and maybe a few GAs went with him. A lot of the staff stayed at Temple with Collins. You know, he brought in a couple other people to, you know, fill the staff, but there wasn't really that much of a void because, you know, he implanted the culture in us to a point to where, you know, without him there, everybody could just, you know what I'm saying, do what they were supposed to do. And there wasn't really any issues.
Yeah, no, I think that it's very awesome that, you know, Temple kind of, he didn't just take the entire staff and leave. I think, like, you know, like you're talking about, like, some of the assistants saw that, like, hey, what he built here is going to stay. We're going to stay. We're going to keep that tradition going. And I think it showed as well. I guess kind of like bridging that to one of a part of our another question, right? You mentioned that like Temple was going to a bowl game, right? The year that that Rule stepped out and headed towards Baylor. And like, as you can see in the limelight, in the landscape this year, right? A lot of coaches and transfers and everything, the schedule for it kind of got pushed up, right? Like before a lot of these bowl games. So being inside one of these programs, right? What kind of pressure does that put on both the staff, the players, and even like recruits when all of these changes are happening with like games still left to be played?
It's definitely stressful for sure. You have to compensate for whatever you lost. It's a business. So, you know, like if somebody leaves, somebody else has to fill their shoes. You know what I'm saying? So as a player, as much as things are going on, you don't really notice, like say a coach leaves and you're like, okay, oh damn, like he's gone now. But 20 seconds later, you got to practice and you got to learn the scheme and all that extra crazy stuff. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's easier to just brush off. As a player, when that kind of stuff happens and you start thinking about transferring and all that stuff, I feel like that's when things get a little more hectic, you know, because you're trying to find a place to be before, you know, people start recruiting, you know, at other schools and all that stuff. So it's like, it's definitely stressful. As far as trying to find a place to be where you can consider yourself home as a player is stressful, especially when all that's going on. But I respect every player that can make it through that process and, you know, find it out on the other way.
Yeah, no, dude, it seems like it's a process like throughout the entire thing. You know, it's like everything, you kind of take everything but little by little. Mm-hmm. Take it where it takes you and hopefully you land in the right spot. Otherwise, you know, I guess there's ways out. It just feels a little bit more difficult whenever you, you know, you're trying to settle down, get those credits to transfer and everything of that nature. So
You also got to worry about school too. Like, you got to make sure your credits are good. And, you know, like if they have the major that you were working on and like, that's stressful. You feel me? Like I personally wanted to stay at Temple because of the media studies major. And that's like a great major to be in. So I personally didn't want to leave that because a lot of schools don't have that broad network that Temple had. But if you're comfortable, you know, like leaving and finding somewhere else to be and their classes work for you, cool. You know what I'm saying?
So the next question I got for you, bro, is as fans and media continue to portray college athletes in the limelight, especially with these new NIL deals, do you feel that the increased attention is, you know, helpful or a little bit detrimental? Do you think it's like better for the athletes in a sense because they're finally getting the cash, or is it like
it all depends. It all depends on where you are mentally as an athlete. I think that the NIL thing should have been a thing probably 5-10 years ago, just because of how much revenue that athletes bring in, especially collegiate athletes, you know, jersey sales. And back in the day they had video games and they're thinking about making them again. So,
you know, I'm about to buy that joint, bro. I can't.
I'll be buying it too. So, you know, I think it's a really good thing. As a musician, you know, it was my last year of college was really interesting because I got to, you know, step outside of the box and not be scared of, you know, like getting my scholarship taken.
Right.
There were a lot of things that people loved to do that they couldn't do because football was their life. Yeah. And I think that for so long, it made it feel like, you know, all you have to do is football. So it was like really messed up for a lot of players, you know, because a lot of players just think that football is the only thing that they can do. And I think that this was the opportunity for people to, you know, step outside of the box and, you know, learn about the business world because, you know, football is not going to be forever. So you gotta learn something at some point. So I think it was definitely good for them to add it. as far as, you know, being in the limelight and all the extra attention goes, it all depends on where you are mentally as a person. You know, if you can take on that extra weight and keep your head for it, by all means, you know what I'm saying? Take that extra money, take that extra attention, because at the end of the day, it's only going to help you broadcast yourself out to the world. So, you know, but if you're not ready for that, then I say don't take that step, because at the end of the day, you still have to be a student, be an athlete. And then now you're having to worry about, you know, posting on social media for somebody or making sure you keep up what you're supposed to do with them. So if you're not ready for that, then it's going to make everything worse. Like as far as school, like you're not going to be able to focus in class. And then like your coach is going to be like, oh, like you messing up now. Like what's going on? And it's just a whole process. If you're not ready for it, then you probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Nah, I think that's an insane point. Like a lot of fans, right? People don't realize that these guys are college dudes, right? Like these, they have class, like they're still, a lot of them are still kids, right? They're still trying to figure out their lives. And so like, when you talk about like transferring, when you talk about like NIL, everything, people always just assume like, well, why doesn't he go there? Like they need a quarterback. Well, it's like, he might not like the campus. He might not like the classes, right? Like he might not like the staff. There's so many things that go on that people don't realize. And like, I think you just said it perfectly, but it's just, it's wild to me how fans can, how they can just think like, oh, like why, that's such an easy decision. Like how could he have not gone to Florida and been their quarterback, right? Like they obviously need a quarterback and he's definitely talented. Well, you know, there's like 50 other variables that people don't
consider. Yeah, there are a lot of variables in decisions as a college athlete. You know, like we have families, we have, you know, different stuff that we got to think about, our mental health, you know, our well-being. So if that's not being satisfied, then, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's probably not the best place for you. So, you know, that's always a big factor for sure.
Yeah. Especially when you make it this far too, like if someone, you know, like you sit back and you kind of say to yourself, like, I could stop right here in high school and not do nothing with college, or I could stop in middle school if I don't want to play this sport. And then you have more time on your hands to kind of just sit around and be like, all right, so what else is there?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
And
when you got to deal with all of this other stuff and you've made it this far already, bro, like y'all deserve what y'all deserve, you know, y'all got to take y'all opportunity to do what y'all need to do. And that's like I think that's the important thing that you mentioned there, is like, y'all done been through all of this long-term battles and hard work from, you know, 4 years old, 5, 6, 7 years old. Now it's like, bro, I got to do what's best for me. And I think that that's like a huge thing that people don't realize. And especially a lot of the people that fill out 90% of that stadium.
Yeah. And also a lot of student athletes are growing as they're going through this process. So as people are watching, you know what I'm saying? Like they're growing as people. A lot of student athletes don't get like exposure to the real world because of the environment that they're in. You know what I'm saying? Like as far as, you know, like jobs and stuff, everyday things that, you know, people do. And there may seem like there's a simple answer for everyday problems for those people, but for student athletes, sometimes there's, you know, some things that they can't do and some things that, you know, are the best for them. And, you know, as a person, you just have to choose which route you want to take.
Yeah. So what's your personal take on, like, with that being all said, now there's even a bigger stage. Like, what's your personal take on the college football playoff and the expansion? And then obviously with this year, we got the bowl sit outs and all of that jazz. It's just becoming a larger, at least in my mind, it's a larger platform here.
Yeah, it's
a lot more going on.
Yeah, with the addition of NIL, I feel like student athletes are starting to trust their own voice more and more. You know, as athletes for our whole lives, we were told, you know, just do your sport, don't do nothing political, just, you know what I'm saying, keep your head forward, and that's about it. But now, like, we have our own voice, and, you know, a lot of people want to be heard. So, you know, and with the expansion, I think it's a good thing, just because, you know, more people get opportunities and all that stuff. College sports are like a big thing, especially there's so many colleges, you know, in D1 football. So like finding, and every year there's only the same 6-7 teams in the playoff.
Even less than that to a certain degree.
To be honest, it's really, yeah, the same two, three teams. And you know what I'm saying? That is cool, but like at the same time, like let's switch it up a little bit. You know, like they are, I'm not even gonna knock those teams. These teams are great teams, like best in the country, best in the nation, period. But you know, I feel like the expansion is a good thing, you know, just giving teams more exposure to those environments. A lot of teams like UCF don't get those chances. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to UCF for even making it to the playoffs, because that's like, as an AAC team, that's like hard to do, bro. And they were ranked like top. So, you know what I'm saying? And for that to be their first experience, and it to go the way it did, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't a terrible game, but like playing Alabama, your first game, and it's just like, it's
bro, tough. But I still think it'll be nice though, because if you think about it, I think it'll turn it into like a college basketball type mm-hmm. of scene.
I think that's what it should be. More teams, more exposure, more games, just because, you know, like a lot of teams, like I said, don't get that opportunity. UCF probably would have, you know, done something a little better if they had been in that situation before. But the most, you know, they've done is played a big team in a bowl game and, you know, played in the championship in our conference. So, you know, like just giving them that different teams that exposure will definitely help the growth of football, you know, coaches as well, you know, like seeing a coach, you know, write up a scheme against a certain team is like, you know, you learn more, you see more, there's more film. So, you know, I think it'd be better for the game for sure.
Well, I think too, like, yeah, I look at it this way, right? You look at like Ty again, I can't remember. It was like 2015, 16, whatever year that Temple team was that they just
16. Yeah.
16. Okay. So you take like, you think 2016 Temple, you think like, it was 17 or 18 UCF that like crowned themselves national champions.
Yeah, great team.
You take Cincy this year, right? Like those teams, I know Cincy fell short against Bama, right? But they looked like they deserved to be there. And I think when you think about it, right? Like who's to say that a 2016 Temple team doesn't go in and beat an Alabama, right? Like, right. You know, it's just the games, I feel like you don't lose anything by giving them the
round.
Opportunity, right? Yeah,
especially with an extra round play, dude. Like, yeah, you get an extra week to prepare, extra week of game film,
exactly.
Extra week for somebody else to tire them out, just like how you gonna be tired out. You know what I'm saying? It's like you don't get any extra, you know, I don't know, hands to you. Put it like that. Yeah, like, let's say Notre Dame, if they didn't have to, you know, if they, let's say they made it to the top four this year instead of Cincy, they wouldn't have had to have played it. You know. Conference championship, whereas the other three teams would have.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You get pass. So it makes it even more large expansion type of a degree where it's like, even if you did fall short of a conference championship, you're still going to play three games if you can even make it that far.
Yeah. And the American Conference like did really well in bowl season.
Yeah.
Like Houston beat Auburn, which Dre, you and I both called, like that was a great game to watch.
Yeah, even the last couple of years, we've made a lot of like big victories. You know, what I'm saying? Temple beat Maryland 2 years in a row. That was really big because we don't really, you know, play teams in the Big Ten. So that was like a, you know what I'm saying? And we played Notre Dame, I think, the first game my freshman year, which we didn't win. But like, you know, like the more teams that we play, the better we get. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a strong argument for it. I mean, everybody's saying that, like, you know, the games are already blowouts now, right? Well, I say, like, okay, if they're already blowouts now, like, what's the worst that could happen, right? Like, you put a 1 Bama against, like, a 12, I don't know, who's number 12 this year? Pitt or Michigan State, right? So what if Bama blows them out? What's the difference between them blowing out the 12 team or the 4 team? Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
At least give them the shot, you know? Yeah. Like,
and if the 4 team does, you know, come back later on, let's say they play them again in the next round, dude, they may have a better shot. They may be riding their high horse.
Yeah.
They may get on a little roll. And that's one thing that matters in sports.
It'll definitely get to the point if this does happen where, you know, there are more upsets like basketball, you know what I'm saying? Where, you know, crazier things will happen. Yeah. And the unexpected will no longer be the unexpected.
You have a lot more to play for. You have a lot more to play for. When you add in an extra round, or add in, let's say, if they did ever go to extra two rounds, which would be a lot more football play. Mm-hmm. It would be a long toll on players' bodies. But
and that's definitely a big factor in why, you know, they've been so hesitant.
But, you know, you add in an extra round, it gives a lot more to play for. You know what I'm saying?
True.
You add a little few more teams that thought, I'm out with two losses.
It also prepares teams for the NFL. You know, those seasons are long, you know, 17 plus weeks. Mm-hmm. That's a long time. You know what I'm saying? Like in life, you can do a lot of things in 17 weeks. So, you know what I'm saying? Just expand the season maybe a week or two. It wouldn't hurt nobody, you know what I'm saying?
Especially if it's only the top 12 teams.
Not everybody goes through it, but like if you are a top 12, I feel like you should get the opportunity to showcase your skills, you know, and, you know, get ready for that environment of the league. Because if you're on a top 12 team, you're more than likely, you know what I'm saying, you're gonna have an opportunity to go there. So
I think that's actually a really interesting spin. I've never heard of anybody using that as an argument, but I think that's a really good point actually about the whole wear and tear of NFL season and getting the you know, some of the top prospects a little bit more prepared and teams ready to that wear and tear. That's actually a really good argument.
It's not easy. You know what I'm saying? I've known firsthand a lot of people who have gone to a mini camp for a team and be like, dude, like this is different. Like even the mini camp is different, even though you're not doing the same stuff you do for fall camp and in college. Like it's still vigorous and there's still an environment that is completely different than college. Like now, like there's nobody there to hold your hand, so like you really gotta, you know, be persistent and be ready mentally for that battle. So if you got to add a week of the playoffs, by all means, you know what I'm saying? That'll help some players get ready for that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think they deserve it. I think they deserve it. It would make games more fun. I mean, I think even if they don't want to add a game, I think we could all do without seeing Bama beat up on FCS, whatever. Right. Like, you know, we just get rid of one of those games. Right. And I know it's important to those really small schools. Right. Like who did Ohio State, like Akron and Tulsa, right? A lot of those programs get funded a lot, but you know, add another game, just add another game if that's the issue, right?
Yeah, you can add another game against another big school that's probably not going to be there because again, it's only 12. Yeah, don't forget that. It's hard to get 12. There's so many colleges, bro.
Yeah, and to play for in a playoff environment is even, there's even more at stake, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like, you know, rather than, you know, doing all of that, maybe just add an extra game in the playoffs. But you know, like said, funding is everything. So you know,
so all right, so I've got two real tough questions for you here, Ty, to close my questions out. All right, so the first one, you've been in Philly for the last 4 years, right? Do you like Philly cheesesteaks?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. All right. So this is hotly debated. Every time everybody, you know, has any connection to Philly, first question they gotta ask is,
where's the best spot for cheesesteaks?
Yeah, best spot for cheesesteaks in Philly.
Okay. My favorite place for cheesesteaks, from my experience, is De Lisandro's.
Okay.
Hands down. It's not like really in the center city area, but it's in Philly. Probably my best cheesesteak experience. Second, just for the nostalgia and the, you know, like real Philadelphia experience, is probably Max's.
Max's? Okay. Yeah.
Max's was the first place I went, and I was like, when I first went there, I was like, this is the best spot I've ever been at. And I went to De Lisandro's and they quickly changed that up for me.
See, I need to do like another tour of Philly, because when we went, I was like, I've only been once. I was like a young kid. We went to go see the Liberty Bell and we got one Philly cheesesteak. And for the life of me, I can't remember where it's at. I hear all these names getting tossed around. So I got to go back, make a steak myself and figure out what's the best. But all right, those are two places that I'll hit up first and compare them.
Should definitely go to
And then the second question I have for you, this one's probably actually going to be a little tough for you. Okay, so we're talking on the show, right, about the rise of the American Conference and how it's gotten like almost to be like a sixth Power Five conference, right? With teams like Houston, Temple, Cincy, UCF all making these big time rises. So that means like over the past 4 years, right, you've gotten to be on the field with some really, really big time athletes, some guys that have gone to the NFL, some guys that were just absolute studs in college. Who was the best player that you faced at your time in Temple?
The best player I've faced or the best player I've like come across, period?
You could give us both.
All right. So the best player I've come across, period, like my whole college experience was Rocky Asen. He transferred to Temple from, I forget how to say it, Presbyterian or something like that.
Okay.
He plays for the Colts right now. He came his senior year. He was a senior year transfer. That dude worked harder than anybody I've ever been around. Like, he made mat drills look easy. Like, never tired. He was always the first to finish the drill. You know what I'm saying? And he was a corner. So, like, I looked up to him, like, a lot. You know what I'm saying? He came in and, you know, started over me, who was doing pretty good my sophomore year. So, you know what I'm saying? I didn't expect him to come in there and make that big of a difference, but I didn't have a problem with it. You know what I'm saying? I still got playing time, but that was probably like the best player I've come across as a student athlete. The best player I've played against, that's definitely a lot tougher. The best player I've played against and actually like seen like do really good, surprisingly, well, not even surprisingly, but Shaquem Griffin. I watched this dude catch a one-handed interception against Temple one game and almost returned it for six. And at that moment, I knew, I was like, this guy is so nice. And no, I didn't have to line up across from him. Like, playing against him, like watching it was just like, wow, like that dude is nice. And for, you know, like he has one hand, you know what I'm saying? So that's already like, you know, people will look at him and be like, oh, you know, like he's already struggling a little bit, but he made stuff that would seem hard for him look easy.
Yeah, he's a remarkable athlete. Who's he play for now? He's in the NFL somewhere. He plays for
I know he got drafted to the Seahawks. I don't know if he's still there.
I think he's probably still there because that sounds about right. Dre, do you have any final questions? I have one more, but I'll let you ask yours.
I'll add one more athlete before you add your last.
Okay, go for it.
One person that I lined up against that was probably the best athlete was probably DJ Moore.
Okay.
When we played against Maryland my sophomore year, that was like, he's a great player, you know what I'm saying? Like, we went at it a couple of times. Like, he's a great athlete. He's very competitive. He's not one of those people who's like stuck up in his own head or nothing, you know what I'm saying? Like, very humble. So definitely watching him play, you know, lining up across from him was definitely like, when you line up across from somebody, you know they're good, like you got to bring your best game. Like, that's how I felt lining up across from him.
Yeah. Nah, he's a great player.
Definitely.
He's a great player. He was exciting to watch in Maryland.
Definitely. Also plays for Matt Rhule right now, too.
Yeah. That's, yeah, funny enough. Full circle. Full circle. what's your, I guess I got this last thing is you know, well, I guess I got two little things. Bowl sit-outs, how do you feel about that? Obviously, this has been happening before. It's not that big of a deal. But, you know, like, obviously, you want to get your bag. We had a lot of them this year.
A lot of them.
What do you think about, like, what does that say to you, at least as a college athlete?
It could say a couple things depending on, you know, like how you spin it. But the first thing that comes to my mind is a lot of people, you know, bowl games don't mean too much. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's great to go to a bowl game. Like, as a freshman, as a sophomore, going to a bowl game, even as a junior, going to it and playing in a bowl game, those were, you know, like experiences that I loved, you know, like those are experiences that you'll remember for the rest of your life. And a lot of people that are declaring for the draft right now are before the bowl games are, you know, like at top schools, and they've been to plenty of bowl games, you know? And so I see it as, you know, maybe they're just trying to protect their bodies from, you know, that one game where, like, you know, now you can, you know, get into that NFL mindset, find a trainer, you know, get your agent in check, all that crazy stuff. So, you know, maybe they're just trying to protect themselves, or maybe it could just be, you know, like mentally, they just feel like it's not best for them to play in that game. You know, most people just want to be safe and get to the draft because, like, for most people, that's their dream, you know? So I think that most people just would rather take that draft than the bowl game, you know what I'm saying? Which is completely understandable. A lot of dudes I know didn't play in bowl games this year. You know, one of my transfers that was at Temple, Arnold Ebikite, he transferred to Penn State and he just declared for the draft. So, you know, I'm sure he'll get drafted. He went crazy this year, but yeah, he foregoed the bowl game. So, you know, it's just one of those things that are starting to happen more and more as transfers start to happen more and more. And as, you know, people start to get a better knowledge of the game, I guess.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Nah, so I guess my final question is, y'all play at the Eagles Arena, correct?
Yep, Lincoln Financial.
I'm sure they probably play a mixture of tracks there. You like music. Mm-hmm. Do they be bumping Meek Mill there?
Oh, before for sure. Every game? That, like,
I feel like that has to be like.
So whenever the players.
And Uzi, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Definitely some Uzi. But Uzi and Meek were the top two for sure. For 4 years straight, every time we walked into the stadium before the game started, you know, like we would do our fly in, all the fans would greet us or whatever, the band would play for us. Then we walk into the stadium. And every time we walked into the stadium, I can guarantee you 10 out of 10, you'll guess what song it was.
Dreams.
Yes, yeah. Dreams and Nightmares by Meek Mill every time. So, like,
I can believe it.
it's just a part of the culture. Like, if you're a Philly team, you listen to Meek Mill. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just, I guess, like, he's the Philly dude. You know what I'm saying?
Y'all ever got did he ever come there and just be like, y'all caught him around in Philly?
I never met Meek. I did meet Uzi.
Oh, he never, wow.
Like, he never came to like a team event or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? But Uzi's always around. You never really see Meek, but Uzi's always around. Sometimes he's on Temple's campus, just messing around, like showing off his nice cars. Like, I met him at a ice cream place called Philly Flavors. And it's right across the street from the penitentiary. And we seen his car outside. We was like, that's a nice car. I wonder who drives it. We walked inside. Uzi was right there. I'm like, yo.
That's so lit. I can imagine that, especially with the whole bus thing that he was doing too.
Yeah. You know,
that bus video where he was.
Yeah, Uzi's everywhere.
My second day out here, bro. Whatever. My third day out here.
Yeah, dude, Uzi's a clown, man. He loves just being around. He's super, super fun. Super fun, dude. Doesn't take it very seriously, you can tell.
Yeah, he's definitely a good person to me.
All right, so then I guess my final question, and we can wrap it up, is, right, like, obviously you're a really humble dude, and I don't want to pretend like that's shocking to me, right? But obviously, like, when you think about the two most swag filled positions on a football field, where usually you get your jaws going the most, right? It's your guys on the islands, right? It's your receivers, right, and your corners. So obviously growing up, right, you had to have a role model, somebody that you modeled your game after, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously being humble, I think, is way more important, right? You want to keep that swag underneath. But like, who would you say growing up, did you like model your game after? Who was your idol? Who kind of built you into the corner that you are today?
Okay, so surprisingly, my role model as a player was not a corner.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Opposite. He was a wide receiver. Hines Ward was like my role model, bro. Like, I'm a Steelers fan too. So,
all right.
You know, I loved Hines Ward. I would watch every game just to watch Hines Ward. You know what I'm saying? His mentality towards football was just so great. Like, you know, he wasn't the fastest person. He wasn't the strongest person, but he always, you know, did remarkable things. And I just thought of that to be crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he was very humble too. Like, you rarely ever heard him, you know, talk trash or, you know, get out of his, like, his own head. So, you know, like, it was always good to see that. Another, like, as growing up, I also looked at Darrell Revis as one of my role models, you know, more of a talkative guy.
Yep, Revis Island.
More of a talkative guy. That's where I got my more talkative side from. I learned to, you know, talk trash from him, you know what I'm saying? And
bro, his mic sessions is crazy.
Yeah, you know, watching Richard Sherman growing up, like, I was in high school when Richard Sherman was, you know, like, really popping off as a corner. So, you know, like, I was learning stuff from those dudes, you know, like, seeing how they reacted in situations. And, you know, like, I kind of took a piece of all of their games and, you know, like, took it into my own, you know what I'm saying? As much of a humble guy as I am, you know, like, there were times where I would step outside of that box and, you know, be that talkative guy. But for the most part, I was definitely, you know, just act like you've been there before, you know, keep it moving, you know, celebrate for a second or two with your teammates. Then that's about it.
Well, no, that's what I was, that was going to be my quick follow-up too. It was going to be, you know, obviously it makes sense to Hines Ward, right? The humility and stuff definitely has been passed down to you, but, you know, without getting into particulars, right? Cause we'll never be on the field. We'll never know what goes on. Obviously, like, you know, being on the field, do you keep this kind of humble air, or have you been known to, you know, kind of get the jaws flowing a little bit sometimes?
Yeah, I've on the field for sure. I've definitely been like known to get into my bag real quick, just because, you know, especially at corner, you know, like, people will test you. Mm-hmm. If you look tired, if your demeanor's off just a little bit, they will test you, and a receiver will be in your ear all day. So at some point you gotta, you know, stiffen up a little bit and say something or do something and, you know, back it up. You know what I'm saying? I normally won't speak unless I do something first. So like, say I'll make a big hit or, you know, a nice tackle for loss or something. That's when I'll start, you know, and stuff like that. If it consistently happens, then you'll hear my voice all day. You know what I'm saying? I can quote just one game. It was my last game at Temple. We played Navy, which was who's always fun to play against. You know, the triple option's not fun to play against on defense, but like physicality and the competitiveness is there. You know what I'm saying? So that game, I like mentally, I was like, okay, this is my last ever football game. Like emotionally, I'm leaving everything on the field. Like, so I didn't have to regret nothing, you know? So like, I think that was the most talkative I've been during a game. Like, I was, you know, running down on special teams, covering people at corner, you know, just talking. Like, I was tackling people, like, just coming crazy, like, oh, like. But nah, that was definitely a really fun game to play in, for sure. That was definitely a game where I got my jaws moving.
Yeah. Sweet, man. Well, Dre, do you have any final stuff? Or?
I'm good.
I love to hear it. Well, nah, Ty, first of all, man, thanks again for doing this. You definitely didn't have to. We really appreciate that you did. Like I told you before the show, you're going to hold the distinct honor of being our first D1 athlete ever. So we'll always hold a special place in our hearts for you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. As always, guys, you can check out any new content from us. We're going to start doing more interviews like this moving forward. You can check out any content on our Twitter at Slight Offsides. And once again, Ty, thank you. We will catch you guys next week.
All right, peace.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.